Welcome to the 73rd episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome. Today I have a very special guest back. He's one of my repeat visitors, Dr. Joel Furman. We're going to be discussing his new book that's just been released, The End of Heart Disease, The Eat to Live Plan to Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease. So we'll get into that shortly. As usual, I like to start out with a little bit about what's going on in my world of plant-based cardiology. Today was a great day for me. At least I take it as a win day. I had a patient that had bad heart failure, really was swollen from his abdomen to his toes, almost disfiguring swelling, and he agreed to, you know, do a simple change that, you know, again, like I've talked about it before, just really strict, and we followed up week by week, and I think that's the key to accountability. So we gave him his water pills, but he ate nothing but whole plant foods and rice for the first week and then the second week, and he is down again, over 20 pounds in 2 weeks of water weight. He feels better. He's had no chest pain. His energy is back, and you know, his swelling is minimal. So we have a little bit to go. So I was very encouraged. The sad part about it, his wife's not doing it, but he's doing it alone. He's making his own food, and he states, you know, today he was getting used to it. So because he feels so good, and he's, you know, not massively swelling, he's tolerating it. My liver failure patient is still doing well, so that was good. And I had another patient who came in January with, again, he was terribly overweight with heart failure, kidney failure, diabetes in his 60s, and had a heart-to-heart talk with he and his wife, and he has been plant-based, and he's dropped 30 pounds since January. He's off all but one of his diabetic medicine that we cut in half today. His kidney function has improved markedly. He's much more energetic. He's had no further episodes of chest discomfort. He's now going to be able to travel this summer. He's, you know, willing to stick with it. He set goals for his weight loss. He set goals. You know, our next step is to get rid of more of his blood pressure medications. So, you know, that's all really good. You know, I also had a lady that didn't do so good today. I had a lady come in and say she actually gained weight on that plant-based diet of yours. And it's like, well, I don't really believe that. I think you're missing a few things. And she's swarping down that she was eating a whole food plant-based diet. But, you know, her weight was down a couple pounds. But, you know, it's really been difficult for her. And you know, it's difficult when people can't take time to really assess what they're doing because they've been in such a rut for such a long time, grabbing things to eat, quick foods, fast foods, without even knowing it, that they don't even realize what they eat. And it, I often see that in the office when I ask people, what did you have for dinner the night before? And people just, you know, they stall out. They really can't remember what they've had to eat for the last couple of days. And, you know, it's always funny because if it was that great and you want to miss it that bad, you'd think you remember what it was. So, again, it's just habit that people get into. I think when people realize that they're really not giving up anything and they're gaining a whole new way of cooking and a whole new healthy feeling and good food and something to look forward to. It. I always tell my patients, I really look forward to every meal that I eat because I enjoy what food I prepare. I know it's healthy and it makes me feel good. We've been experimenting a little bit with some different ethnic foods. I have been making some recipes out of a book called Indian Kitchen. It's Vegan Riches, Indian Kitchen, Traditional and Creative Recipes for the Home Cook. The author, again, is Richa Hingle, H-I-N-G-L-E. Really good food. She admits oil for the most part, and if she doesn't, I admit the oil. The food has been really, really good and really tasty. I'm also starting to experiment a little bit more with some raw foods. I think there's definitely merit in eating a lot of your meals raw. You know, that said, it's easy, you know, people kind of panic, but when you think about it, most people eat a big salad that are plant-based, so that's really easy. I experimented with a green papaya salad this week. I also have experimented with a sprouted quinoa tabbouleh that I really liked. I usually, in the evening, do smoothies on my own with fruit or just a big bowl of fruit, so obviously that is raw. Some of the direction, I want to start experiment with some of the raw sushis that they have in this book. I heard an interview with Matthew Kinney, and he's a well-renowned raw food chef, and I've been doing some recipes out of his Raw Food Real World cookbook. So that's been very exciting, and I'm trying to incorporate more and more of those. The raw food aspect of things, you get into the nut issue. And certainly, you know, Dr. Esselstyn, if you have heart disease and you're trying to reverse things, you certainly don't want to get into more than a few walnuts a day, and certainly keep under a couple ounces. You know, Dr. Furman in his book, like we'll talk about it, that, you know, 2 ounces of nuts are healthy, and there's certainly a lot of data that people eat nuts live longer, have less arrhythmias, less strokes. So, you know, I don't think there's a horrible problem with nuts used as a condiment. And some of these recipes have nuts, like a quarter cup of nuts in them. I think you have to pay really a lot of attention. So if you're going to have a recipe that has a sauce made with nuts, then watch what you're doing the rest of the day and try to, you know, keep an eye on that. You want to keep your, you know, a couple ounces of nuts a day. You know, I talked with Dr. Furman when, and you'll hear in the interview that, you know, if you're really lean, you can get away with, you know, a few more nuts. Certainly, if you don't have angina and heart disease, you could probably get away with a few more nuts. So, you know, again, if you're lean, but, you know, people take it the wrong way sometime and start to think that they eat a whole lot of something and they, you know, it's okay. The other thing is that there's a lot of good data that a Brazil nut a week will help lower your cholesterol. So, you know, there is some merits for nuts, and it just, you can't overdo, and you can't start going down the road in some of these raw desserts, not necessarily in Matthew Kenny's book, but, you know, there are a lot of desserts out there that calls for cups and cups of cashews, and then you have the cashew cheeses and things. So you start to go down that line of almost the fat content of the standard American diet. So you need to be careful along those lines, and we'll talk about that a little bit in the interview with Dr. Furman. On a endurance training aspect of things, you know, I'm past my half Ironman race, so we're just, I guess, starting to get in the mode of training for the fall Ironman. So I'm back to swimming and getting my mileage up there. So, you know, starting to get the 2+ mile swim in, starting to increase the length of the bike ride on the weekend, starting to add a bike ride during the week, followed by a short run. As most of you know that listen, I have 2 German Shepherds that I take on runs every morning. So even if I get on my bike and do a training session, they're still waiting for me to go for at least a short run. So I'll get off the bike and, well, I'll get suited up and their leash is on, and I'll do one then the other for even just a short mile and a half each. So that makes for good training. I'm also trying to incorporate some yoga for, you know, stretching and range of motion a couple times a week. It makes me feel good. And I'm also trying to do strength training. I'm a big proponent of that as far as injury prevention. So it's hard to get it all cracked in during the week and get a podcast in and get a cooking classes in for my patients. But, you know, keeps me busy, keeps me active and thinking. So I look forward to, you know, ramping up that volume as the summer progresses. So without further ado, I think we'll go into the interview because it's a little lengthy. So I hope you enjoy, and please check out Dr. Furman's books. They're all great. This one is no exception. So enjoy the interview. It is my pleasure to welcome back Dr. Joel Fuhrman. I am so excited. He has released a book just up my alley, and it is the name of it is The End of Heart Disease, and I believe he is correct. I referred to him quite often in my office. He's on my little prescription pad on books to read, and now I get to add The End of Heart Disease. So welcome, Joel, and congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me on, and I'm excited about this time to, have my book being released this week. Very exciting.
Yeah, it's the perfect addition to your multitude of books addressing many diseases. I guess the bottom line is it just works. It works, right? And it's all about nutrient-dense foods.
Well, yeah, I've written numerous books, but I felt that this book about heart disease, even though it seems like a topic that's been discussed a lot in the past and other people have maybe addressed it, it really has never been addressed like this before, because I feel that many more people would be willing and be anxious to eat differently and better if they don't just know how effective eating a diet that's nutrient-rich and, plant-rich and nutrient-dense. Not only, is the diet style impressively lower cholesterol, get rid of oxidized LDL, reverse diabetes, lower blood pressure, you don't need medications anymore, and can reverse atherosclerosis and wipe out heart attacks and strokes and dementia. Not only are all those things possible, but the idea that drugs are our savior and that medications can lower our blood pressure and prevent strokes and cholesterol-lowering drugs can prevent heart attacks, all these things are, how should I say, tremendously exaggerated. People don't understand the futility of taking medications, that they're associated with significant risk, especially increased risk of cancer from taking these drugs, and also that the procedures, like angioplasty and bypass surgery, can put you at heightened risk of having a premature death. When I was able to take the time in the book to really inform people about the true risks of medications and how little effect they have in ultimately preventing you from having a heart attack or a stroke, I think it really is tremendously motivating for people to say, yep, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make a change in the way I eat, because I recognize the drugs don't work and I can't just take a pill. I have to really eat right.
Yes. It's amazing how we have coached people into wanting procedures to make them feel safe that they're not going to have a heart attack, when indeed the testing doesn't predict anything for the most part, unless you can go 15 minutes on a stress test. We know you're in pretty good functional shape, but the plaques that are going to cause the problem are never going to be picked up on a stress test.
That's right. That the plaques that are the obstructions that a stress test identifies are those that are greater than 75%. And those are obstructions that have been there for a long time and have already become calcified and have smooth muscle infiltration and no longer are inflamed or acutely irritated. In other words, these are older plaques that are not likely to rupture and cause death, whereas the newly laid down plaque, as you know, with a soft base, with a cholesterol and soft base and a thin calcified clot and more inflammation, those are the ones that are really prone to causing a clot, cracking and causing the interior portion of the plaque, be exposed into the blood vessels and propagating a clot to form that can occlude a vessel. So what we're both saying right here is that stress tests and angiograms do not identify the most vulnerable and dangerous plaques. They identify and enable the doctor to treat the ones that are least dangerous. And treating those plaques and shown in scientific studies not to result in protection against future heart attacks nor extension of human lifespan. In fact, putting that stent in, that foreign body in the heart, is now created a nidus of inflammation. In other words, you have a foreign body there that can create a clot where the stent ends and the endothelial, the lining of the blood vessel, begins. And now the person has to stay on clot-busting or anti-clotting drugs for the rest of their life, such as Plavix and aspirin, which then will increase the risk of gastrointestinal bleeding or a hemorrhagic stroke or a bleeding to the brain. So in other words, we've made a person at moderate risk and turned them into a person at higher risk through the procedure, when all along, if they changed their diet, they could have stabilized all the plaques in their heart, the ones that are most dangerous and the ones least dangerous, and the obstruction could have been opened up. In other words, was this person ever told of the facts? Did they have comprehensive informed consent Did they know they have the opportunity to reverse this without the medication, without the stent, and told they would have been better off if they can change their diet? And the answer is, in most cases, people have no idea that there's a better, healthier, safer way, and more effective way.
No, I had to deal with it this week. Actually, an 88-year-old gentleman who was very active had 2 years ago had a stent placed in a stable lesion because of a routine stress test, and now presented with thrombus formation and unstable angina because of all the irritation and inflammation in his arteries. And I really couldn't get completely through. Well, actually, I got through to him, but not his wife, who unfortunately did the cooking, as far as, you know, there's a better way around this. So yes, he's eating the greens, but we're adding a pork chop to it, you know. But nevertheless, the problem was initiated by the stent. You know, the problem when we actually end up cathing him because he became unstable was because there was all this thrombus formation at the distal portion of the plaque. And again, it is a nightmare as a cardiologist and a physician. As you know, these the Plavix and all these anticoagulants that just cause havoc with people. It's just one problem after another. And, you know, I plead with people, you know, you don't want to go down this road because it is a never-ending road once you start it. Just like back surgery, you know, I mean, it just becomes one stent is going to lead to another.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, so that's what I was hoping. I was hoping that this new book would people would get so much information. It would make it easier for the physician to have an influence on people making the type of dietary changes that are necessary to really see benefits, to see these kind of benefits.
No.
And as you know, what's really popular today are these high-protein diets, like the, they used to call it the Atkins diet, the ketogenic diet, the, you know, the low-carb Atkins-type diet. Now they call them the paleo diets, or the, you know, the, in other words, it's still in vogue today. You still see a big section of the weight loss community, of the physical training community, of the, you know, people advocating these high-protein diets in spite of an accumulated amount of evidence showing that they're dangerous. And we now have studies that have gone on for 10 years, 18 years, 20 years or more that's showing that these are a dangerous way to eat. And I think that, and then people are bombarded with this idea that butter is back and saturated fat is not bad for you, and it's okay to eat more, you know, and you know, now we know that it's not the fat, it's the sugar. And I just wanted to help clarify these issues with an unbiased review of both sides of the issues to show people where the cumulative amount of evidence points, to make it so that this, you know, I'm helping to distill down these controversies so people realize that most nutritional scientists in the world that are today do not feel that these are major controversies, and we all agree on some of these basic premises. And the more people we can get to accept the reality that they have to eat less animal products, not more, and they have to remove sugar, yes, but they have to substitute vegetables and beans and mushrooms and nuts and seeds and fruit, and not put more, you know, cheese and butter in there instead of them when you move the sugar. You have to eat more plant food. So that's the key, and how incredibly effective this is when it's really utilized in the proper way.
My nightmare today was that a case manager in the coronary care unit told one of my patients that he needed to take a stick of butter and boil it and then drain it off and use the water because that was healthy. And I was like, what?
Wow.
I chased them down. You know, it's like, no, you please do not talk to my patients about nutrition. When you get, let's talk a little bit about, you know, the lipid profile. You know, I've noticed observationally in my patients since doing a plant-based diet in the office and in teaching this extensively that in people that follow a whole food, plant-based, nutrient-dense diet, their total cholesterol comes down and their LDL drops like a rock. But if people come in on statins and have a lower total cholesterol, their LDL doesn't drop. It's really a high percentage still. Have you noticed that?
I'd like to talk to you a little bit about, you know, lipid profiles. And then, you know, a lot of people are sending people for these measurements of LDL particle size, LP little a, on and on and on. What do you see when people go on a whole food plant-based diet? Do you ever see an increase in particle size? What typically do you see, or do you look at these studies at all, or do you look at these labs, or you just go traditionally with LDL, total cholesterol, and triglycerides, and HDL?
You know, it varies because obviously some people don't want to spend the extra money. Their insurance doesn't cover it or something. So most of the time I just see LDL drop so radically and so favorable, I don't have to do further testing. I think the indication for further testing may be a person who, if LDL is still elevated, who's already eating right, or who's, you know, and then they're concerned about their LDL running 120, 130, 140, and they're already on a good diet, and those rare cases it doesn't drop to the favorable range below 100. And then you could show them, well, look, if we do a more expensive test or we get an oxidized LDL, I can show you that your oxidized LDL is very favorable in spite of the fact that your overall total LDL may be elevated, and maybe your, the particle size is, you have the large fluffy LDL, the small dense ones. We could then do some more testing and see that, it seems reasonable if they don't have to go on a statin drug. So I don't say I routinely do it, but I certainly recognize that oxidized LDL is where the money's at, is a better test than just whole LDL. But I don't think you need to do that if your LDL is so favorable and low anyway,
What do you ever see when people first start on a whole food plant-based diet and they're dropping weight? Do you ever see a bump in that? Just like with fasting, you see a bump in cholesterol because of
Yes, it does happen sometimes. Sometimes the person, when they're in that weight loss phase of dropping lots of weight, and it doesn't happen all the time, but some people's LDL doesn't drop or could even go up a tiny bit as they start to lose weight. But because we say that if you've been eating unhealthy in the past and you have a lot of fat on your body, that's saturated fat, it's like eating an animal product. Instead of digesting the meat, you're digesting your own meat and your own fat in your body. And until that weight stabilizes, you don't see that drop in cholesterol. And that's why in the Journal of Metabolism, when David Jenkins did a study in Toronto on people eating a nutritarian diet and showed that the cholesterol dropped on the average 33% LDL cholesterol in 6 weeks, he wanted the weight not to drop in the six-week period. He wanted to keep their calorie counts high so their weight didn't come down, because he felt that would be testing, weight loss might be, an extra variable in there. So we're talking here that it's potentially possible that with acute weight loss in the phase when you're dropping weight rapidly, cholesterol may not drop as low as it's going to when your weight starts to slow down and stabilize.
Yeah, I had a patient, I do a nutrition class in my office where 6 sessions, I cook for them, I teach, menu planning and on and on and on.
Oh, wow.
And I had this person email me yesterday, and they were very frustrated. Their cholesterol dropped, from 240s to 180s, but they're doctor got their primary got a Berkeley Heart, and their Lp(a) actually went up. But again, they were still right in that acute phase. They were still losing weight. And it's like, my God, goodness, from, 247 to 187 without drugs, I said, that's fantastic. You should be encouraged,
That's right. And, and what's fascinating in what you just mentioned earlier is that fasting to me is when I put people on fasts, if they fast for 2 weeks or 7 days or 14 days and they eat nothing but water, and you check their cholesterol, their LDL cholesterol goes up and it stays elevated for about 8 weeks after the fast. Their LDL still doesn't come back to normal. Their body starts processing and breaking down the atheromas, and it seems like when you're rapidly breaking down atherosclerotic plaque instead of slowly breaking it down, in that really rapid phase of breaking down it rapidly, it seems to push the cholesterol up, not down, because it's being released into circulation.
Yeah, I actually did a 3-day water fast to kind of, use myself as a test case, and my cholesterol went up on the third day. And, my weight went down some, and then I assume that, it'll stabilize out and I'll recheck. My cholesterol wasn't high to start with, but it did bump up a little bit.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Yeah, so I thought that was good. So I loved in the book, you talk about even this LDL of 120 to 130 increases your heart disease by 40%. Yeah, people, again, this misnomer of, well, I'm okay because my good cholesterol is high and I have this high, this borderline high LDL, and it's not protective.
Right, and people have to keep in mind we're a society where, even though only about 40% of the population, or 34%, dies of heart attacks and strokes, the people that don't die of heart attacks and strokes, those people that die of cancer and pneumonia, they have heart disease too. It's just something else usually got them first. And what I'm saying here is that if you eat American food, heart disease is so ubiquitous that you eat almost all Americans eating the way other Americans eat them and develop atheromas and be at risk of having a heart attack. And it's hard to identify it for a physician to know who's really at risk and who's not. You know, there's not one test that gives all the answers. I mean, certainly being overweight, having high blood pressure and high cholesterol and having high glucose levels, all those things dramatically increase your risk. But if you can, you know, you're taking your life into your hands if you eat conventional food. It's just a dangerous way to eat. And the safest thing to know is that, you know, I tell them not to have a heart attack or a stroke. I say you have to eat right because I have to look at the nutritional quality of your diet, that you achieve the normal body weight, a normal high normal blood pressure, a normal cholesterol level without medications. Because that's the criteria that determines if you're safe, is having a normal body weight, normal exercise tolerance, and normal blood parameters without medications to do it. And that's where we have to use lifestyle to achieve that. And doctors, you know, so doctors can be the motivator and the teacher, but you've got to take charge of your health. It's because your health, your future is in your hands.
And, you know, then turning to salt, boy, that is such a difficult problem with, you know, people in Florida. You know, you talked about, well, I'll do two things. There's the holiday heart attack, which you mentioned in your book, you know, during the holidays. But here in Florida with retirement, we have snowbirds down here. And so they come down to spend the winter, and it's one party after another. And, you know, they're bulking the idea of eating healthy because, you know, they won't get invited to parties. But this holiday heart thing is really dangerous with the salt and fat that people get into.
It is. And, you know, as you get older and you have a widening pulse pressure, and that means your blood vessels get stiffer, and when the doctor gives you medications to lower your systolic blood pressure, it pushes your diastolic into a dangerously low level. And if you go to, and you go have high salt meals and you go, you know, even off salt and on salt and off salt and high on salt and have your blood pressure shoot down and shoot up, and the doctor gives you more medication when it's up and less medication when it's low, and it really puts you at very high risk. And I say to people, I say, you know, that's, it may be fun, but you may, but one meal could be your last meal. You really got to take care of yourself and be consistent with the way you eat and not jump back and forth on this because your real body can't take it in your 80s, you know, or at this point in your life. So it's really important for people to recognize that if they got to learn how to cook using spices and herbs and the techniques, you know, that you and I teach people to make food taste delicious. So they got to get it, so they don't rely on just salt, sugar, and oil the way most people go after flavor is by frying things, cooking them with oil, and adding more salt and sugar to it. And that's just really especially unsafe and more unsafe as we get older, too.
Yeah, I heard a chef interviewed, and he's like, if you want to cover up bad food, just add fat and oil to it, and you're fat and oil and salt, and you're good to go. So, and that's what happens in the cheap restaurants, you know. I mean, again, they make it, you know, very high fat. And then, of course, I loved your last statement. You have to learn how to cook. And I think that that's a big, it's a big thing I try to teach into my class is like, okay, well, if you want to socialize, then have them socialize at your house so where you can control the food. Because, you know, going out to Perkins, you know, all these different fast food chain restaurants at night, it's not going to cut it.
Yeah. And also, you know, always bring a healthy dish. I see it as an opportunity for people to share goodwill with others. In other words, you show them you can make a delicious, you know, wok Thai casserole, vegetable casserole, or a delicious dessert that's really healthy, and people could try it and see how good it tastes, and you could have it to eat at the party. And you could, it gives you an opportunity to tell people that, you know, how you cook and how you eat at home, that to, and how you feel, you know, that you could be benefit other people if they knew about it and how delicious it could even taste. So I see it as an opportunity to have potential to have goodwill for others is to show them how you can make food taste delicious that's healthy.
Well, I will tell you that your banana oat balls cookies and your healthy chocolate cake are a hit at our local meetup plant-based foodies potluck. So you're there on every menu. So you need to have kudos to you.
Oh, thanks so much. And that is really great. I mean, I always say this chocolate cake is just unbelievable. People can't believe how good it tastes. And it actually has beets and carrots and zucchini with cocoa, banana, pineapple, you know, and I also throw beans into some of these cakes, too. And it's really amazing. They taste great, like a bean brownie, you know, with very little sugar. And, you know, and the only sweetener, of course, is a little bit of the fruit of the date. And I usually don't use more than one date per serving. So we've the desserts are not quite as sweet as commercial desserts, but they're much more flavorful, and people will really enjoy them, especially to note that when people eat this way over a period of months, their taste buds actually get stronger. when they enjoy the subtle flavors of natural foods even more, and they start to enjoy this diet even more than their old diet. But there's that initial period within the first 3 months where they're still kind of missing the emotional attachment to some of the sweets and heavily seasoned foods. We call them the hyper-palatable foods, the fried foods and the greasy food and the heavily salted and sugared foods they're used to. But once you get over that hump, you know, this really pays off as far as pleasure, too. So that's and it's worth it. Anything in life that has such tremendous benefits is going to take some effort. And there's some effort learning the recipes. There's some effort learning the information. There's some effort making a change. But anything in life that gives you great payback has effort associated with it. And you feel even better about it, that you put the work in. And then you really feel like you earned it, and you earned the value, and you're taking care of your life and your loved ones appropriately.
Well, you certainly, are a testament to walking the walk. I always tell my patients in the office that, you know, it's like, look, bring these guys up, bring their pictures up. It's like Dr. Furman. It's like he was a figure skater, and I said he still looks like he could throw somebody in the air really good, you know. And as opposed to some doctor recommending the paleo diet that weighs 260, you know, it's like, look at who's telling you what to do, and make put that into it.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. There's so many of these people, you look at them and you go, how do people listen to these guys? They're like, they don't look healthy. They're so overweight. They can't do it themselves. I think there's other people that do it.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, I was just going to say that, it's like there's so much in this, we want to go into our later lives and even in retirement, enjoy life. And so many Americans, as they work really hard their whole life, and as they get older, they get so sickly and life becomes a struggle. And medically dependent, and then furthermore, their children have to take care of them, and so they used to take care of their children, but now their children are having to take care of their parents. It interferes with the lives of their children there. So it's really like, if you really want to take good care of your children, you have to take good care of yourself, so you don't become dependent on you and become medically crippled in nursing homes and unable to care for yourself. It's just so much disability and poor healthy life expectancy in this country, and people in nursing homes. It's just, it's tragic, and it's even more so tragic because it's almost totally avoidable now that we have such these advances in nutritional science that enable people to live into their 90s and beyond in great health.
What's the first step? You know, somebody listening today is like, okay, I'm on board. I want to change. So, you know, what are the first, few things you're going to say? Okay, next week you're going to...
Well, the first step is to eat a salad every day as a main dish, as one of your meals. The first thing is to take a big postcard, and put it on your refrigerator that says the salad is the main dish, and make a big salad to eat at either lunch or dinner as the start of one of your meals. And the second thing to do is to make a giant pot of vegetable bean soup or a vegetable bean stew on the weekend, and then you can aliquot it out into like 10 different containers. So you can take it for lunch with you to have like a salad and a soup and a piece of fruit for lunch. So, I mean, can you imagine if all of America just did like the two things, had a healthy breakfast, like steel-cut oats with flax seeds and blueberries or strawberries with some almond milk or something, had a healthy breakfast of like whole grain and berries and seeds, right? And then for lunch they had a salad, a soup, and a piece of fruit. Yikes, that's two-thirds of the diet right there. We'd probably save, scores of millions of lives and take away the healthcare crisis in America just if people did those simple two steps we were just talking about now. It's like, it's called like a no-brainer.
Yeah, and that soup, we do it quite often, and that soup just gets better and better as the week goes on, as all the vegetables mix and the different flavors mix. So I when I did the water fast, I realized it's like, I really look forward to each of my meals. I love my oatmeal. I love my lunches. I love my dinners. It's like I was more bored and missed those, and I crave those vegetables, It's like I really do like to eat.
Yeah, exactly. So. And that's also one of the keys, of course, one of the magic keys to having great health is to switch the type of fat you're eating from butter and oil and dairy fats, let's say, and switch over to get your fat from seeds and nuts. Because seeds and nuts are protective, they're wholesome, and they have anti-cancer effects and longevity-promoting effects. And I make these delicious salad dressings with seeds and nuts. Like I love my orange sesame dressing where I have like peeled navel oranges mixed with toasted sesame seeds, some cashews, a little blood orange vinegar, and a squeeze of lemon. And mix that together on a salad is just phenomenal. Or even a tomato almond dressing with like a tomato sauce, roasted garlic, maybe sun-dried tomatoes and a little almonds and sunflower seeds and fig vinegar or balsamic vinegar and a few raisins or a fig, and you blend that up, and it's just a phenomenal salad dressing. In other words, these dressings are gourmet. They taste fantastic, but the dressings themselves are good for you and healthy, and that's the little, how should I say, adds the finishing touch to make your diet super healthy, because you don't want to use an unhealthy dressing. You know, a lot of people will put down 100 calories of salad in a bowl and throw 300, 400 calories of an unhealthy dressing on top, saying, forget the salad and just drink the dressing straight from the bottle, because you've just ruined the value of the salad, you know. So the point is, one of the keys here is to learn how to make delicious tasting but really healthful salad dressings.
Yeah, I see that all the time. You know, I mean, I often joke, it's like there shouldn't be any lettuce left in Port Charlotte, Florida, because when I ask my patients what they had to eat, they all had a salad. But, you know, 20 minutes later, I get to the ranch dressing and the chicken breast on top, you know. It's like, no. But, yeah, I agree with you. The dressings are key, and these are. I've tried your dressings. They're very good. What about people that complain? It's like, well, I'm not getting enough oil. I have dry skin.
Well, then they can get more, you know, they should get the healthy types of fats. But some people on a vegan diet or in your vegan diet can need more DHA and EPA, mm-hmm. and they can take a supplement. So I give them a little bit, like 200 to 300 milligrams of an algae-based EPA and DHA supplement, mm-hmm. DHA and EPA supplement, and then to make sure they have adequate nuts and seeds in the diet, especially if they're, you know, they're slim, they need the extra fat. So I think there's been a mistake in a lot of these heart cardiac and these proven cardiac reversal programs by some physicians who have people avoiding all fat. And I've been doing this for more than 25 years with thousands of patients that have reversed their advanced heart disease, eating nuts and seeds liberally, as long as their weight's, you know, going in the right direction. They're not overeating calories. They can put more fat in their diet in the form of sesame seeds and walnuts and pistachio nuts and delicious salad dressing. So I don't see those type of problems as much, because my patients are generally utilizing nuts and seeds, and they're also taking a vegan EPA and DHA, an algae-derived EPA and DHA supplement, just to make sure that they're not going to go the other way and be too fat deficient.
Yeah, I think, you know, the pestos, you have a couple pestos that are really, really good, and with the walnuts and the almonds. What about avocado? Are you adverse to, you know, half of avocado or no?
No, I'm not adverse to half an avocado. It's just that certain seeds and nuts have such powerful longevity-promoting effects. I don't want them people to excessively eat avocado so they have no room to eat nuts and seeds. In other words, if you're having the walnuts and the flax seeds and the pistachio and the cheese, you know, if you're having those healthy nuts and seeds, and you still can and you still have the room for the extra calories of the avocado, you can add it. So I don't think that these wholesome whole foods inhibit your reversal of diabetes and heart disease, as long as you don't overeat calories from them, and your weight is favorable.
So go for the nutrient dense nuts and seeds, and then if you have a little bit of extra room, then throw a little avocado if you want, but for flavor. But make sure you're getting the nutrient dense, disease reversing nuts and seeds.
Exactly. So in other words, if you're a person who's small and older and doesn't do much physical activity and not burning much calories, if your caloric intake is low, then go for the nuts and seeds first. If you're like me, and you know, running and lifting weights and playing tennis and exercising, I have enough caloric room in my diet to have the nuts and seeds and still have some avocado too, because I need the extra calories anyway. It's based on how much calories you can utilize in a day. I certainly want people to eat all those different food groups I recommend, such as, you know, green vegetables, both raw and cooked. I want them to have some beans every day. I'd like them to have some mushrooms and onions each day, including raw onion. And I want them to, of course, have some beans and seeds each day, seeds like flax seeds, chia seeds, hemp seeds, sunflower seeds, sesame seeds. And once you do that, then you can have it, you know, once you've got the food groups I want you to have in, once you're not overeating and you're consuming these healthy foods, then you can use a little bit of avocado if you're already consuming, you know, but the right foods. You follow me?
Yes, I do. So where's the book tour taking you? Are you touring or just getting it out locally? What's happening?
Well, I have this new animated video I just sent you out today. So I was on Dr. Oz shows this week. I have my new television show coming out in June. But I'm doing a radio tour from my office right here in my house. In other words, they booked a morning drive radio tour, like in the morning. I'm on a different radio show from different parts of the country, so I can do a lot of just PR right from doing radio right here. So it's great.
Oh, that's perfect. So, from the comforts of your home. Well, I wish you the I wish you the best of luck. It's a fantastic book. You know, it goes along with your other fantastic books. I recommend them on a daily basis. And now there's something for everybody, no matter what lifestyle disease they pick. You've got some nutrient-dense advice for them.
Well, thanks so much. Appreciate for all your support, and also you appreciate your work and the fact that you're on the same page and both getting the personal satisfaction from really watching people get well. And it's the most thrilling part of medicine, I think. People get thrilled by high tech and cutting people's chests open and putting in bionic arms and stuff. But this is really thrilling, too, to watch people lose weight, get rid of diseases, watch their blood pressure go down, and being able to reduce and eliminate medication and protecting people from, future tragedies. So this is really it's what we go into medicine for, and I think a lot of us, and we love doing this and motivating and helping people get well.
No, it's revitalized my practice, and, there's something great every week now, so it's I love it. So best of luck to you, and we'll always be in touch because I'm sure there's another book around the corner someday.
Thanks so much. Really.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, take care.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview. Again, the book is entitled The End of Heart Disease. It's a great read. There's something new. If you've read his other books, recipes are fantastic. Just a few things to highlight. Share your goodwill with others. If you found a recipe that you like that's plant-based and no added oil, and share that as a cover dish with your friends if you go to a potluck or have people over for a dinner. We recently had a dinner where we combined my friends and I. We made Indian cuisine, vegan Indian cuisine without oil, and pick a cuisine and make a party out of it. People will learn. If people pick a recipe to bring over to your house, they learn as well, and they learn what they like. The other thing that he mentioned, which is great, people want to know where to start. The breakfast is a no-brainer, oatmeal with berries and nuts and flaxseed, and have that big giant salad and put everything in it that you can think of: beets, radishes, carrots, celery, cucumbers, peppers, marinated vegetables if they're, marinated in a vinegar. Beets are great, peas, corn, black beans, pinto beans. So make your salad, hearty. And the other thing is that big pot of soup. If you have it available, you're less likely to grab something else. And it does get better as the week goes by. So if you have a couple of soups to choose from, that's a great lunch. It's easily portable, to work, and you can make these things, the night before, get it all ready, and it's something to take with you. The other thing is you can make a baked potato and pour some of the soup on the baked potato. That can be a dinner. We often do chili over a baked potato as a dinner with a salad. So it doesn't have to be these long, laborious recipes. You can, do some quick things. And don't get frustrated if your cholesterol doesn't drop like a rock. If you're young and you have really high cholesterol, you may be a person that makes cholesterol very well, and it takes some change in your diet. Or if you have weight to lose, you're breaking down fat, you're going to release some cholesterol. So, be patient with yourself, but just make sure that you're eating very healthy. And if it's not dropping down, then, I encourage you to keep a food journal or diary and write it down as you eat it. One, if you're writing down something, you're less likely to eat something that you is not part of the nutrition plan. And the other thing is you'll remember it if you write it down right then and there. You cannot recollect what you've eaten. I had a patient failure, so to speak, that came in and said, "I gained weight on your plant-based diet." And it's like, well, that's really impossible to go from a standard American diet to a plant-based diet and gain weight if you're truly eating that way. So there was obviously something, and we went all through the usuals, and I couldn't find what was going on. But usually it comes down to it's either some sort of cooking oil that people are adding a lot, maybe roasting vegetables and putting a whole lot of oil, or they're doing a whole lot of desserts that have a bunch of nuts and sugars in them, or they're eating a lot of bread and pastas, and again, sauces on jar sauces tend to have a lot of oil in them. So So there's usually something, you know. The other thing is cheese and crackers, or not if you give up the cheese, but there's crackers. And then there's the plant-based cheeses that can be very high in oil. So, you know, be very cautious. And when you are eating your nuts as a part of your, you know, 2 to 3 ounces a day, and if you're going to eat them in it, you keep be aware of, you know, how much nuts you're putting in. Look, kind of keep a mental note of the serving sizes and nuts for a dish that you make. You know, if it has 3 or 4 cups of nuts, you're getting a lot of nuts in it. So, you know, you want to stick to that 2 ounces, which is a quarter cup of nuts a day for the most part, you know, unless you're really lean and looking to, you know, put on some weight, or, you know, get a little extra oil in your diet. So, you know, as long as it's healthy, you can probably get away with it. Aim for the seeds before the nuts, you know, if you're a little bit more overweight. And again, hold back on the avocado if you haven't got your nuts and seeds in first because of the nutrient density. So I hope this has helped. I hope it's shed some light in a few areas. Check out his book. Check out all his books, The End of Diabetes, The End of Heart Disease, and Building Your Immunity. They're all very, very good books and give a lot of insights. So I hope you enjoyed yourself. This is going up on Earth Day, so happy Earth Day. It's a nice, if you eat plant-based, you're certainly helping to save our environment. So that's a great place to start. If you have any questions, you can email me at jamiedulaney.gmail.com, and it's jamiedulaney.com. You know, check out Dr. Furman's website. I'll put a link to his new little video on the website as well. So enjoy your week, and I'll see you next week with another interview. Be plant strong, get some sunshine, go out and take a walk, or a run, or a bike, or a swim. Have a good weekend.